it is now or never. It's now or never to change this country on the path that it's on, because we are either going to end up with the likes of worse than Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. And like I said before, I'll take the roll of the dice with Trump. But anyway, as we said at the top of the show, we have got tonight a really, really fantastic, fantastic guest, Lauren Day, an investigative journalist and screenwriter who wrote the book I'm holding here. Here the page is flipping. America's War on God. And to be completely honest, Dee has actually read more of it than I have. So let us welcome on our guest and say good evening. Lauren, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Daddy. How are you?
Oh, we are doing great. And say hi to the co-host, the lovely Dee.
Yes. Hi, Dee. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing? We're glad to have you with us tonight.
Well, as Dave Ramsey always says, I'm doing better than I deserve. Lauren, so real quick, first and foremost, tell everybody where they can find your book, America's War on God.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.com and also on Kindle. It's available on some other places too, but I'm not familiar with too many of them. So the big one is Amazon and Kindle, of course, if people want to electronic version of it.
You know, I can't bring my – I have an iPad with the Kindle app, and Dee has a Kindle. And when you went away on vacation, Dee, you actually used your Kindle. I can't bring – I've got to have the book in my hand. I can't bring myself to doing the page flip on an iPad. It's just not normal to me. But rather than getting off into the electronic world – let's talk about, as you put on the cover of the back of your book, about America's in big trouble, and that it is.
Yeah.
And in your opinion, as an investigative journalist, it really stems from, as you wrote here, increased in direct proportion to the abandonment of the Judeo-Christian God. And I really wanted to talk about this, but I don't know, were you listening to the entire show, or did you just actually log in just now?
Yeah, I heard maybe about the last 5 minutes of your last show. Very, very lively.
Okay, well, thank you. The reason I was asking is at the top of the show at 8 o'clock, when I was telling everybody about you coming on and reading your bio, I explained that when I posted the event page, and you saw the event page on your page on Facebook, I caught such grief from so many people on so many different pages who began to argue with me that the United States was never, ever founded as any type of religion and had nothing to do with Judeo-Christian. In what's the founders had no desire whatsoever for America to have a religion, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, these people, what really got me, and again, I'll say it in case the kid's listening, one was a conservative young man who decided to argue with me and started debating me on Facebook as to whether or not the United States was founded on Judeo-Christian values. And it's like, if this is what these kids are learning, is it any wonder that we are where we are today?
Yeah. Yeah, the country was definitely founded upon values. It's just whose values. And history pretty much shows us that it was definitely based on biblical values and the gospel of Jesus Christ and things like that. If you read the original charters of the 13 colonies, they were all in some form of another use verbiage that say that they were basically their mission in the New World was to promote the gospel of Jesus Christ or similar language. And those are the 13 original colonies.
You know, and it's interesting is what this young man argued with me, and I'll just throw this out there in case he doesn't call in. He posted the article number 11 from the Treaty of Tripoli Agreement, where in it states that the United States was not founded on any particular religion, and including Islam, and because that treaty was signed, for those that know, that listen to this show, they know the history because I've talked about it a lot. The Treaty of Tripoli had to do with the Barbary pirates, and the first time the United States ever went to war overseas was with Islam and the Muslims that were known as the Barbary pirates. And they not only, as I pointed out to this young man in my post, not only did they totally negate the first treaty, we had to go to war a second time with them because they threw the first one away and basically said, well, screw you, the Quran tells us to do this. So I was like, you know, learn your history and learn why. And then I explained to him, interestingly enough, for those that really want to know about that treaty, the Arabic text of that treaty did not contain that portion that stated that we were not found on any religious principles. So, you know, I pointed that out to him. He continued to want to debate, and I finally said, if you really want to debate it, call into the show. What amazes me, and Dee and I were talking about this at the top of the show, was this is where our public education system has gotten us. These kids, you know, I don't fault this young man for what he learned if he learned that in school. And it would not surprise me if he learned that in school. The days that you and I, Lauren, and Dee went to school and we're all about the same age, God was part of that. You know, they didn't teach religion, but God was certainly part of our educational system. And that's not there anymore today.
Yeah. No, it isn't. It's interesting if you read some of the textbooks of McGuffey's readers that were very prevalent in the 1800s in particular, and I think by 1960, I think they had sold something like 125 million McGuffey readers, and this is what the kids learned from in the 1800s, and I think the greater half of the 20th century. Those books, in fact, the purpose that they were written, it says, was to give people knowledge about salvation through Jesus Christ. It also taught Bible apologetics, how the Bible came about. It's completely based on biblical principles.
Now, somewhere along the line, you know, you've been an investigative journalist probably for most of your adult life, if not all of your adult life. Somewhere along the line, something happened that made you decide to sit down and write this book. What was that moment, if you can place that one moment? What made you say one day when you woke up, you know what, America's gone to hell in a handbasket, and I'm going to write a book about it? What was it that made you decide to do this?
Well, it probably was about 34 years in the waiting. I became a Christian around 1980, actually the very beginning of 1980, January 15th. And I knew that God had raised me up for a particular purpose, but I waited 34 years to discover what that particular purpose was. And it wasn't until August of 2014 that I did wake up one morning with the idea for America's War on God. And in fact, I sprang out of bed to see if the domain name was available, and to my shock and surprise, it was available. And that, for a couple of days, I just had some kind of a spiritual experience where I was feeling that God was leading me to write this book. And the funny thing is, Gaddy, is that my entire Christian walk, I'd always been interested in Christian apologetics, and I always tell people I was discipled by the late great Christian apologist Dr. Walter Martin, and I always was interested in Christian apologetics, and so I feel like those whole 34 years I was being prepared to write this book, America's War on God. The items or topics in it are all things that I've been interested in and have read about for about 34 years. It actually was a one-day thing where I felt I had the idea and I felt God was leading me to do it.
Now, I've as I mentioned to you on the phone and I admitted to you, I didn't have time to read the whole book, but I read, you know, various portions of it, and my apologies for that. Dee started reading it a few nights ago, and Dee puts herself to sleep every night, no offense to the authors, but she reads before she goes to bed every night. And and I want to say from the outset, and you and I talked about this, and it's important to me because we have so many Jewish listeners. This isn't just, you know, we say Judeo-Christian values. So when we're talking about Scripture and we're talking about the New Testament, you know, to me, you know, the old joke of we're praying to the same God. We just have part one and part two, you know. And I know a lot of Jews would disagree with that, but I want it understood that when our founders decided on how they were going to write things like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, how they were going to form this nation, they looked at both the Old and the New Testament. So it's very important, you know, as we have this conversation this evening, that we don't think that it's solely Christianity, it's Judeo-Christian values. And I hope you don't mind my kind of throwing that in there.
No, it's absolutely true. In fact, Thomas Jefferson at one point advocated for having on our currency, I don't know, I don't remember now if it was a particular currency like a dollar bill or a $20 bill, but he advocated for having the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night, that God, and which is how God revealed himself and led the children of Israel out of Egypt and into the promised land. So it's interesting that Thomas Jefferson was wanted to do an Old Testament theme.
You know,
and Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson considered himself a Christian.
Yes.
Even though people would argue with that, and he did dabble in deism for a while and some secular writers, but he did consider himself a Christian.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the biggest arguments I've had with people about that is people have said to me, well, Thomas Jefferson wasn't a Christian. He owned a Quran. And it's like, okay, time for a little history lesson as to why he owned the Quran.
I have a Quran right here. I'm looking at it.
Makes two of us. Oh, my gosh. Allah forbid.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments with Obama was when he mentioned that, the founders had a deep respect for Islam. Jefferson had a Quran, and I'm just about hit the roof. I was like, let's go into a tell on why he had that
he
Quran.
Had a copy. Exactly. You know, it's funny because you mentioned money, and I wanted to throw this out there because people have been suing the federal government since I was probably in my early 20s, and I remember it. People have been trying to get In God We Trust off of our monetary system. It's still there.
Yeah. It's like the Bible itself with so much opposition. How could it still be there?
Exactly. Now, what in doing this book, and I'm going to open it up real quick so I can get the chapters in front of me. But in doing this book, you've got a total of 10 chapters plus the epilogue. You go into why – I shouldn't even say why. You go into what we can do as a nation to bring us back to more of a country that actually does – I mean, God, it would be nice to say that we didn't even have a war on God, but a country that actually reveres the fact that there is a God. How do you see, I mean, just take it from the top and talk about what you want from the book. I mean, how we got to where we are and how you see us turning it around.
Well, what I'm hoping the book will do is I'm hoping that when people buy it, they will first of all see that there is a war against the God of the Bible. And I'm very particular when I talk about God, because there's so many ideas about what or who God is out there. And the God of the Bible has revealed himself through the Old and the New Testaments, and he's very specific about his attributes and what he likes and what he doesn't like. And that's the God I'm talking about. I'm hoping that once people acknowledge that we have offended the God of the Bible, the Judeo-Christian God, the God also of the Jews, like you said, that then they will go through the book methodically, because it's laid out in a progressive type fashion. They will read about the Bible, and they'll read the evidences for the reliability of the Bible, and then they'll read about the other ideas that are contrary to the Bible. And the biggest one today is godless evolution. I do a small treaty about evolution and how it just doesn't work, and then they'll read about some of the different religions that are prevalent in America today: Mormonism, the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, Buddhism, and of course Islam is the big one that's trying to establish itself in America today. And they'll see that all of those gods from those different religions bear no resemblance at all to the God of the Bible. So
right.
There is one supreme God out there, but there are a lot of other ideas that are masquerading as the one true God that is not the one true God, or are not the one true God if you take the different religions. So what I'm hoping people will do is once they see that the Bible is reliable, then they'll start to believe what it says. And the Bible is very specific what we need to do to live in prosperity and peace. We just need to obey what God says in His Word. It's very simple. It's not difficult. And the Bible, yeah, I'm
no,
sorry, you go ahead now.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. Finish your thought, and then I'll chime in.
I was going to say some people think that the Bible is very difficult to understand. Me as a Christian, I encourage people to start with in the New Testament with the Gospel of John, reading that. But I would also suggest people read books like the Exodus, which is after Genesis, because in Exodus and also I think in Deuteronomy and Leviticus are the commandments of God, the thou shalt not. And so we get a pretty good idea what God doesn't want us to do, and then we also find out what God does want us to do.
Exactly.
So rather than starting in Genesis, I would suggest in the Old Testament, start with the Old Testament book of Exodus. And then if they want to read the New Testament, start with the Gospel of John, which is the fourth gospel.
You know, and I couldn't agree more what you were talking about. When you say God, we need to differentiate the various, for lack of a better term, because I hate referring to them as gods, but there's a lot of different religions out there. And like you pointed out, you know, Islam, one of my biggest pet peeves is when I hear a Muslim, especially these imams that are in the United States who are trying to get people to understand their line of thinking and bring them into the Islamic faith, they say, oh, well, it's the same God. We just call him Allah. No, it's not the same God. And if anybody would pick up a Quran or a Hadith and read it, they would immediately realize it is not the same God. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves is when they out there, these imams, these, you know, which is basically the preachers of Islam, the imams, are out there saying it's the same God. You call him God, we call him Allah. And that's right there is where the conversation ends for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence that Allah is actually the same God that was called Sin. I don't understand why it's pronounced Sin, but it was spelled S-I-N. He's one of many gods in Mesopotamia from before even the time of Abraham, which was nearly 2,000 years before Jesus Christ. So it predates even Christ, and he actually predates even Moses and Abraham. So there's just a lot of archaeological evidence and historical evidence to show that this Allah is actually just one of a pantheon of gods that were worshipped by the Mesopotamians, like the Assyrians and other similar races back 2,000 years ago.
No, and you're right. I've read exactly that, and it's funny that you mentioned Sin, because not to be confused with a sin, the name of it was Sin. The name of the god was Sin, and I also have read that. And you know, we could talk about Islam all night. What I want to do, we're going to take a short, our half hour break, and we're going to play.